We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into today's OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. We are going through the Andrew Berry press conference. That's where we'll spend our time today, myself and Andrew Spade. So stick around for that. If you missed yesterday, we went through the Browns' decision to alter the helmet, which was, you know, obviously rumored for quite some time. Well, the face mask was rumored for quite some time, but, the gloss finish on the helmet and sort of taking the look of the helmet collectively all the way back to what I thought was pretty much perfection. We talk about that and some of the other uniform changes that are happening across the league as more and more of those have started to trickle out. So go back and check that out. And then we had a little bit of banter on Jermaine Ifedi, who the Browns sign for their offensive line situation, kind of some reasoning why they would make that signing, what it means for OTAs and minicamp, and then potentially how the roster could shape up during the season with new special teams changes and stuff like that, and maybe perhaps even a desire to have more offensive linemen than you're accustomed to seeing because of the kickoff stuff. So a lot of sort of balancing act stuff going to be happening there with how roster construction might change. Over the weekend, we're going to have a mailbag, so that will be something you can look forward to. Good questions have come in on that. So otherwise, yeah, let's get over to our conversation on Andrew Berry's time with the media, hit on the big topics, those of which include, obviously, Deshaun Watson, some of the stuff around why they traded for a seventh-round pick and what they can do with that pick. And then some stuff with Nick Chubb, too, right? So he updated us on pretty much everything. We probably won't hear from him until after the draft. So always good to get Andrew Berry's thoughts on things as the guys get back in the building and a little bit of pre-draft tidbits in there as well. And then also Kevin Stefanski spent time with ESPN 850 up there and then 92.3. So those are interviews that you should try to find as well because he opens up a little bit more than you're accustomed to hearing, and especially in a press conference setting. Those guys get a little bit more comfortable on the radio. So overall, good stuff from the leaders of the Browns organization. So let's get over to our time with myself and Andrew and go through what we thought of that press conference. Let's get there right now. All right, Andrew Berry got up in front of the media, put his arms crossed, answered questions like he always does. Same posture. It's amazing that he does the same thing every time he talks. It's a little arm crossed, a little smirk on his face because he knows he's got information that he will not give you. So let's go through some of the things that stand out here. So he said that they'll feel better about what they'll do in the draft when they're around 10 picks out. Doesn't have a feel for it right now. I think that's a shocker, Andrew. He didn't give us his like top three he's trying to select at pick 54. Says they're still open to trading up or trading down. All of the stuff that we traditionally hear. We don't even have to analyze that one because that's pretty simple. Another one we don't have to analyze is when he mentioned that the Browns extra seventh round pick, pick 227, acquired for Leroy Watson, like you talked about a minute ago, is just a resource. How we deploy that resource remains to be seen. I think most of us who understand the depth of this draft or lack thereof think that that is just a piece of ammunition to maybe move up around the year later, similar to what they did last year, moving a seventh for a sixth, or as a part of a package of picks for some other spot to move, maybe moving up out of 156 to 142 or whatever, whatever. There's a lot of different routes they can go there. He reiterated exactly what a GM should say about a seventh round pick in any draft. It's just a piece of like ammunition or, it could be somebody they select, but it's more of a piece, a chess piece than anything else. Big things here that we should hit on. He said Nick Chubb began running on land this week, which is funny when you read it. You hear it and you think about it, it makes more sense. He's off the treadmill, whatever. But I'm like, all right, so Nick was running on some clouds previously. He's going to take himself back down to the earth and see what happens.
Probably also some pool jogging, right?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah, where they do that like lower impact running to kind of keep the things moving, but not the full impact of being on ground. I think it's where Chubb is at is just really interesting. After the, you know, the contract details came out and then he said what he said, they are using such conditional language. And, you know, we'll talk about what he said about Watson here in a second, but it's the same thing. I think odds are that both players are going to be okay and be able to return to playing football. But it is notable that the Browns are in mid-April back in the building and they're like the starting quarterback and starting running back are not able to fully participate. Like that's, It's not great. I mean, that's not where you want to be midway through the offseason.
Mm-hmm. Certainly not where you want to be. I should overcorrect a little bit, Andrew, because Andrew Berry did mention that Watson was able to throw up to 40 yards. So not really ripping it totally, but he is throwing somewhat, not a part of like live, you know, 7-on-7s or anything like that, because you need to be able to be your full self if you want to do that. But they, again, said he's supposed to be ready for week one. That's fine. We have not heard anything about week one with Nick, and I don't think we'll be hearing anything about week one with Nick throughout the entirety of this thing. But the idea here is Watson will be ready week one. But to your point, missing both of those guys, not a great situation. But the thing, I want to go back to yesterday's podcast, which was specifically talking about the shoulder injury and like saying, I think I even framed it as like they have the wrong people looking at this. And I think that that's the wrong way to phrase it. Dr. Elitrosh, who's, if you listen to what Watson has to say about him, and then I did some more research into him, he is one of the preeminent doctors dealing in all three sports with shoulder injuries. You're talking about the physician for the Dodgers. He's involved with consultant with the Lakers, and then he's heavily involved with the Kings out there as well. So he is, listen, as far as understanding this stuff and finding someone with the right pedigree to handle this injury, they have the right person. The thing I'm nervous about is the constant talk about this is not a very popular football injury. That's where I get nervous, because if you listen to what Watson had to say, a lot of what Elitrosh was telling him is like, hey, this is how the baseball guy did this. We don't really have a pathway of an example of how this works with football guys. It's mostly, you know, like Trevor Story had the injury happen to him diving and landing on the shoulder a couple weeks ago, lost the entirety of his season with the Red Sox. So like, this is the thing that I'm most nervous about is, you know, with baseball and basketball a little less than baseball, but baseball and say like another example Watson gave was a volleyball player. Like those are non-contact injuries other than you diving and landing on it with your own body weight. Whereas football, and to some small part basketball, but basketball is less, you just don't see as many elbow and shoulder injuries in basketball as you do these other sports. You can't control somebody else delivering a blow. So I just, and maybe Watson's the test sample here, Andrew, in some fashion, but like how much can that shoulder withstand? Not something he does wrong, but he gets hit in the pocket wrong, or like, that's the thing that makes me the most nervous. Not that he won't be ready week one, not that he doesn't have the right doctor doing the surgery and performing and rehab with him and everything. And it's not Watson's fault. I'm just wondering how a glenoid injury is able to recover and what the likelihood for that sort of injury recurring is inside of like a 12-month window, because that's something he can't control getting hit. Now, there's some hits he can control not taking. We've talked through this. But there's some that he can't. So, like, what's the fragility of that sort of thing is what I'm most nervous about.
Agreed. I think there's two concerns. That's the number one, is that when you have an injury like that in a shoulder area that is relatively hard to protect when you play football, if you're going to take a hit and you don't want to be hit in the head, then the next area to get hit in is mostly going to be your shoulders if you're leaning forward. It's a concern. There's no doubt that it's a concern. There's a concern about the durability. There's a concern about the like lost long-term of strength in the shoulder if the injury persists, or if there's a re-injury, or even just through the rehab process, if he's able to get back to where he was throwing motion and arm strength-wise. I mean, like, if, like, I think the, What I would say about that part is that the Browns being vague about his progress cuts both ways, because you can understand why they don't want to, and you can understand that they're saying everything's on track. You can also, like, until people that aren't inside the organization have a chance to see him throw and in competitive situations where he's not able to baby the ball or whatever, you don't have a great judge of where his arm talent is compared to where it was prior to this injury. So we don't really have a baseline for his ability to throw the football right now. And I think, you know, you expect players in the modern NFL, you expect players with injuries to make a full recovery, but there are players every year that get hurt and don't come back to where they were previously. That's part of it. So yeah, that's the number one concern. The second concern relates to the first thing you mentioned, which is the rarity of the injury, especially in the NFL. And thinking more about this, the struggle of the Browns to figure out what was going on and how to treat Watson last year and how to handle his timeline and all that stuff, I wonder how connected that was to the fact that they didn't fully understand the injury, because it's not one that they see.
It has to be. And flat out, because the way you hear them talk about this is, we don't even know when it happened. So if they don't know when it happened, if the true glenoid or whatever injury took place week two or week what, seven with the Cardinals, I think that was, is a bit of a jarring thing. In again, not trying to doom and gloom it, I just think the reality of the situation is this is uncharted territory, even for smart people doing the surgery, and the Browns trying to figure out how to manage it moving forward is something they're probably trying to map out. I would imagine there's a lot of time being spent between the Browns training staff, head surgeon, and this Elitrosh doctor, right? That they're trying to sort of make sure the plan's in place. I have no doubt they're doing everything they're told. I have no doubt Watson's doing what he's told. And I have no doubt that they're lying. Like, they're being truthful about him being ready week one. The plan is to be ready week one. The difference is he won't get touched in training camp. He won't get touched in the preseason for the most part, but he is going to get hit in season. And how do they feel about that thing holding up in season? Whereas I think that there's probably a lot of guessing game built around that. And we're just going to have to figure it out when the time gets here. I know that I'm going to be wincing the moment he takes a hit on the right shoulder, being nervous about it. And it's not to say he doesn't play the next play and the next play and the next play and even a full half, because we saw that happen. But then the next Tuesday, we're going to hear he can't throw. And like, that's what you're nervous about, because we did not see that situation after we thought the AC joint, which is what we thought was hurt or whatever. We didn't see this happening when it was announced. It was one of the more, I cannot believe it, injury situations, because we had no indication that that's happening. So we'll just have to hope that there's good fortune involved here, that there's good fortune, that it heals the right way. So
I think the way to boil this down is the thing that people want to hear the least, which is there's uncertainty about the quarterback, is still the case in two ways, right? There's the questions about his play on the field, which is a different conversation that we actually haven't even really had that much. And then there's the conversation about how healthy he is. And my feeling at this point is that uncertainty will surround this team through the preseason, because I think the Browns, if they're being smart, are not going to turn Deshaun Watson loose.
Correct.
Most likely in the preseason.
Correct.
So we want this to be a situation where things are straightforward and they're, you know, they're going to be back to normal and everything kind of evens out. And I understand the desire for that from fans, but I don't think that that's a realistic expectation given this injury and the path back from it. I think it's more likely that there will be uncertainty around this until the Browns are playing regular season football.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day, and that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. You can take injuries until you can't. Like, that, you don't even know where that line hits. You hear guys talk about it all the time. They add it up. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it the way I used to do it. Couldn't make that run that I turned the corner on all those years of my life. Didn't happen anymore. Couldn't cover the wide receiver that was against me. I knew it. That you hear these players talk about it all the time. There was a moment that happens either in practice or in a game where you're used to being able to do this certain specific thing that you could do really well that got you a role in the NFL. And then all of a sudden I just couldn't do it. And that's the moment that you start to lose confidence. And then you think you can't play the way you're supposed to play. And you lose that competitive edge that makes you a top 10 player. We are not saying that's like a foregone conclusion with Watson, but I think you're on the point of like being nervous about that. The same level of nerves. I guess what I'm trying to get out, Andrew, is we should be having the same level of nerves about this injury as we did, the NFL did, or at the time, more specifically, Drew Brees and his people did with Drew's shoulder, because that was uncharted territory. Now, a torn labrum and a torn rotator cuff is a more serious thing, but at that time, there was concern about whether Brees was going to have to retire or not, right? And that, we're not saying that we're there with Watson, but we are there with like not having a clear pathway forward with the shoulder. So I think you have to have a little bit of that concern in the back of your mind, what that ultimately looks like. You listen to Brees talk now, he's like, I had to change the way I played the game. I didn't have the arm strength I used to have. He talks now, he can't even lift his right arm above his shoulder line. He can't do it. He can't throw to his kids in the backyard with his right arm. He has to use his left arm. Like, the arthritis that's in that shoulder, all of that is a very real thing. So I'm not saying Watson is done. Nobody is doing that. But I think you would be wrong. You'd be remiss to not acknowledge that there is some uncertainty about this that could linger into the future, which is not something that you're very comfortable with, which is probably why we see the Browns adding some quarterbacks and playing it a little slow. Maybe that the belief isn't there that he can't do it if he's fully right, but how certain do they feel that he will ever continuously into the future be fully right? I think they're preparing for that type of possible outcome health-wise, and I think you have to. Even though you're fully committed to him with money, and I don't think they're lying when they talk about a 10-year plan, but sometimes the body will only allow what the body will allow, and I think it's a real part of the equation here that just isn't getting discussed because people are brushing off this injury a little bit more than I think they should in a very realistic sense.
I think that's a great way to summarize it. And I think that it's not fun, it's not enjoyable, but the reality is that until proven otherwise, that to me, that cloud of question about his status will hang over the Browns' 2024 season.
Right. Just fact of the matter. Again, we'll hope we are sitting here on this podcast hoping that's not the case, but you have to recognize the situation here. Last thing that we heard Andrew Berry say that mattered was the Greg Newsom discussion. And I think this is probably how he's talking on phone conversations, which is, hey, I have three corners who can play press man, and that's a unique thing in the NFL. So I'm not just giving that player away. There is no doubt that they have had calls on Greg Newsome. I think they probably have received some offers similar to the Jerry Jeudy situation, and he's probably said no to some of these people. So it is noteworthy that he's going into the press conference backing up his ability and kind of leaving it out there that, like, he didn't deny he's had conversations, is the point, Andrew. He said, I'm not giving this player away.
Clear cut that he's trying to drive the price up, and I think that they would do something for the right price, because I just don't think they – I think they would be fine keeping Newsome for another year with the option, but I think they understand that it gives them more flexibility financially if they don't have to pay their third corner $12.5 million or whatever it is next year. So I was surprised insofar as the lack of movement to me has felt more like they aren't interested in moving on. And so I think there's been some reporting about that from Mary Kay Cabot and a few others maybe. But his comments, and specifically in that way, leaving that door open, tell, I think, a little bit of a different story, which, you know, I honestly was a little heartening to me. I'm interested now to see if they can get a deal done during the draft.
Well, you go into next offseason, if they keep him, obviously you're going to pay $13 million or so in 2025. You still get Emerson for cheap, but the Browns' theory here, and they're working sort of mode of operations, is you pay some of these guys early, and Martin Emerson is probably a guy that you're targeting to pay after his third year, so he doesn't go into his fourth year on a contract that ends, right? So you're probably looking at paying him. So like that offseason, Greg Newsome's this former first round pick, hasn't been paid, given an extension, and then you extend Martin Emerson. I think that it just would lead to some, you know, maybe some dissatisfaction inside that cornerback room, maybe in a way that's uncomfortable. I don't think there's pressure to trade Greg Newsome. Like, if you don't get it done, he's not useful because he's still playing at a very stomachable number this year. But when it gets to next year and you maybe have to extend, Emerson, and I understand Emerson would still play another cheap year before that kicked in, but some of those things would just be sort of sitting in that room in terms of like who they believe and they are in the pecking order of things that could get a little sloppy or a little just weird, awkward, right? So again, not a pressing time to trade him, but if Newsome doesn't have a great year per se, Andrew, and then you have him at 13, you're not trading him. Like there's no trading him. His trade value will never get higher than this moment, this offseason, because he's on another cheap year before the big money kicks in. And he hasn't put together like a full-on clunker of a year, whereas that could happen at any moment. And even next year, if he has a great year, he's still going to be a one-year contract, $13 million guy who we're transitioning back to outside corner. I'm just thinking out loud here, like the value of this player probably is not going to be higher than it is at this moment.
I agree with that. I also think when you consider what L'Jarius Sneed was traded for example, I don't think that his value is that great either. And so it becomes a question of how motivated are the Browns to trade a player for less than what they consider optimal value. And I think they've shown over the past handful of years that they don't want to do that really ever. So as much as I am more intrigued to see how this plays out, unless a team gets into a position where they there's kind of two options, right? There's the one option where the Browns take advantage of perceived value versus actual value in the way that they do that could make a trade make sense, where a team thinks they're not giving up that much, but the Browns know, whether it's pick swaps, that sort of thing, that they are actually getting more value, or a team gets desperate because they kind of strike out in the draft. I think those are kind of the two options.
Remains to be a situation that is a nice idea in our head. But to your point about Sneed and what the value of some of these guys is, and especially when a player has a looming contract thing to solve, they're not early in the portion of their contract to where they're an easily tradable asset, it does get a little tougher for teams to do that. Because if you, similar to Jeudy, if you trade for Newsome right now, you are giving him a new deal on projection. That's just that's the fact, especially if you're going to use him outside and pay him a little bit more. You're paying him on projection fitting into your system, and that always makes people a little bit nervous, right? So a trickier situation than I think on the surface a lot of us have thought the Newsome stuff is. So I think odds are Andrew, he's probably here again this year. And if it goes well, there's probably a future contract for him in Cleveland of some kind. If it doesn't go well, you're talking about maybe getting something very light, if anything, for him next offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would say is that I'm struggling right now to think of, I shouldn't ever do this to myself on the podcast live, but have the Browns traded a front end player since Andrew Berry's been the GM, like a player that they start?
Not
other than like the Mayfield situation where they pushed him off the team, essentially. Like,
no, they don't do this, and they haven't. Now they're in a spot where they could, because they right. have some pieces behind these guys that are
right.
They're going to do this. So no, pieces. We haven't seen the Browns operating from a position of we have the most valuable asset with these things around it to make a trade. They've been the team capitalizing on that with some other teams, but.
Right. Maybe you consider Donovan Peoples-Jones last year at the trade deadline is he was playing for them. So maybe that's the closest you get. But
sure.
In terms of a player of Newsom's pedigree, certainly a first round pick of this general manager trading him away. It's the same conversation that we had about Wills. They just don't do this. And I mean, not a lot of teams in the NFL do. It's not like I'm saying they're out of sync or anything. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the odds are against it. But the door is a little more open than I thought it was.
Yeah, the most open it will be moving forward is after the draft. If somebody doesn't get a guy they want, then you might find something desperate. You might find something desperate in the preseason if injuries start to mount up or something like that. But once the year starts, it gets hard to envision a way he's on another team, because then the future of what you're looking at is a fifth-year $13 million number. And with that becomes like, can this guy play? He hasn't played outside in 3 years. Is he going to be good out there full-time, doing that all the time, being left on an island? There's a lot of uncertainty in that sort of situation, and playing inside for consecutive years. And as we know, the value of those contracts significantly dwindles, and like what Greg thinks he's worth. There's a lot of factors, a lot of moving parts inside that. But what we know now is that Andrew Berry has said he's not going to give him away. So I think the offers that have come in at least have told us that he's not ready to accept that that's the value of the player. So here we are. We've got everything covered from Andrew Berry. He did mention one funny quote, which was essentially that the NFL is unpredictable. Here it is on the way out the door, Andrew. A year ago at this time, if I said you'd have Brittany Mahomes, Taylor Swift, Ice Spice, and Jason Kelce all in the same suite watching the Super Bowl, you guys would have looked at me like I had five heads. He's right. That would have been crazy. I don't even know who Ice Spice is. Should I know who that is? Is that like an Old Spice variation? So like the
it's the name of a person.
It's a Jake from State Farm, but they have him Ice Spice. Representing Old Spice, and this is a branding thing.
I don't know, I
know who Ice Spice is a little bit, okay. But I don't know that what she sings. I have seen the person, but I thought that was really well played. I played that off like a Brit.
Yeah, you had me.
Okay, good. That's what you I was aiming me. For. That was what I was aiming for. I was also kind of hoping to get an explanation from you, so I probably played my
card. Just a bunch of stammering.
All right, guys, we're out. We're gonna come back and probably talk a little draft tomorrow. We have a weekend mailbag. Get those questions submitted if you'd like to have those questions answered on the show. We have several already through various channels. You can DM those. You can respond to the Twitter thread, or you can shoot them over via email, jake@theobr.com, and we will gladly answer your draft questions. And that's the direction most of these podcasts will go. And then right after the draft, we'll do the traditional talking to local beat guys about their coverage of these players and learning a little bit more. I think that's a fun activity to do every year. So a full-on draft mode, unless the Browns do any other crazy sorts of things leading up to it. We don't expect that, and we probably won't get very many times with the media until they actually make some selections, and then we'll be able to you know, give you some more information. So Andrew and I, thank you for stopping by. Rate and review the OBR podcast if you can. Helps us immensely. Thanks to those of you who have done it. And again, appreciation for those of you who have taken time out of your day to listen to this pod. Very much appreciate that, guys. Be well, have a fantastic day, and go Browns.